This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:13 and you're listening to the evening edition with Lynn and Sharmila, and it is official that Datuk Sri Dr. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi will have to enter his defence for his 47 charges in court after Justice Colin Lawrence Sakira ruled that he would have to do so because he basically has not been given immunity under Section 37 of the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission Act for truthfully disclosing information about Yayasan Akal Budi.
So if we look at those charges that he's facing, just to recap, 47 charges, 12 counts of criminal breach of trust, 27 counts of money laundering, 8 counts of bribery. And Justice Sakira said that the accused basically has three options in his defence trial, and that is to either testify under oath on the witness stand, with the prosecution being given the opportunity to question the accused, or to give an unsworn statement from the dock without being cross-examined, or to keep silent and to not answer charges. And upon consultation with his lawyers, we now know that Zahid Hamidi has chosen to take the stand and to give a sworn statement, which is an interesting development.
So a bunch of different things to talk about here, right? Firstly, what exactly is going on legally and just trying to understand that, but also looking into how this might potentially affect Zahid Hamidi, his career and so on, as both an MP as well as his position within UMNO. So we are going to be crossing over shortly to our guest, Pushottaman Puvanindran. But we'd like to hear from you. Will you be following this case? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now we have Pushottaman Puvanindran, a lawyer, joining us. Pusho, thanks for speaking with us. So as we said today, the court has ruled that Zahid Hamidi will need to enter his defence on the 47 charges. What would this court ruling mean? What are the legalities involved?
Hey, hi. Thank you, Lim and Sharmila, for having me. So as you mentioned, today Zahid Hamidi has been ordered to enter his defence. At the offset, generally in a criminal case, the trial begins with the prosecution attempting to prove a prima facie case. A prima facie case is a Latin term. It simply means on the face of it, at first view. It means, is there a case to proceed or not? So the prosecution would attempt to prove prima facie case by bringing in evidence. That means by calling witnesses, by tendering documents. In this particular case, how the money trail went and so forth. At the end of the prosecution's case, the trial judge, which is in this case the Leonard High Court judge, would decide whether the prosecution has made a prima facie case or not. If the Leonard judge believes that the prosecution has made a prima facie case, then the accused is called to enter into defense. Similarly, in this particular case, the Leonard High Court judge it's of the opinion that the prosecution has made a prima facie case, and hence Datuk Sri Zahid Hamidi is asked to enter or called to put his defense. At the defense stage, what happens is it is now the turn of the accused or the defense to rebut the prosecution's case by bringing in their witnesses and their evidences to show or to tell their version of the story and how they are not related to the charges preferred against them. And only at the end of the defense stage will the court decide if the prosecution has proven a case beyond reasonable doubt. So to simply put in a layman's term, the first half of the trial is when the prosecution will introduce the case, introduce their evidence, and its defense turn to poke holes into the prosecution's case. And the second half is when the defense brings in their evidence and their witnesses, and the prosecution attempts to poke hole to their case, in simple terms.
So previously, Zahid Hamidi's lawyer had argued that his client had quote-unquote immunity from being prosecuted for 46 of those 47 charges, and that's because he'd answered MACC's questions. What provision in the law would have allowed for this argument?
This is a very interesting question. Because it involves a very interesting provision, which is Section 30, Subsection 7 of the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission Act 2009, the MACC Act. This is an act that has since been deleted. But mainly this section speaks on the fact that any person who discloses information to the MACC during questioning shall not be prosecuted. But this is the argument that the Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi's lawyers have taken, that since Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi has disclosed the information to the MACC, should he not be prosecuted? But the position that the prosecution took in arguing against this particular application was that this particular section falls under the discretion of the public prosecutor. That means the public prosecutor still decides whether or not to prosecute or not to prosecute a particular person, even though he has given information at all. I'm yet to read the full grounds of judgment, but I'm made to believe that the learned High Court judge has agreed with the prosecution in saying that Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi does not have immunity. However, I would require to read the full judgment to fully appreciate how his lordship has directed his mind to deciding this.
So, Zahid Hamidi is choosing to take the witness stand and give a sworn testimony in his own defense. Is this significant?
As I told you earlier in our previous question, that at the end of the prosecution case, then the defense is called. When the defense is called, the accused person has three options accorded to him by law. The first is to give evidence on oath. Evidence on oath is, as you have mentioned, to take the witness stand and give a sworn testimony. That means he will be taking the stand, he will be giving his statement of his evidence under oath, and most importantly, he will also be open to cross-examination by the prosecution. Which the prosecution can cross-examine him on the veracity and credibility of his evidence in court. The second option, the first would be evidence on oath. The second option is a statement from the dock. That means he doesn't enter the witness stand. He gives a statement from the dock on what he wants to say about this case on his side of the story and all that. But the thing about a statement from the dock is, one, it is not under oath, and two, it cannot be cross-examined. It is merely a statement. Hence, the probative value of this evidence, I mean, the evidential, I would say, the value that is considered by the judge for a statement from the dock would be much lower than an evidence on oath, because evidence on oath, you are being cross-examined. And, you know, your evidence has to withstand the cross-examination of the prosecutor. So, whereas in the statement from the dock, you're merely giving a statement which cannot be cross-examined. So, the value for these statements are much, the weight of it is of diminished value. The third option, the first is evidence on oath, which Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi will be doing. Second, the statement from the dock. And the third one would be to remain silent. To remain silent would pretty much mean that the learned judge would have no other option but to find the accused guilty. This would pretty much be to say that you consent to the prima facie case and you are ready to be sentenced. So in this particular case, as I have mentioned, Dato' Sri Zahid has taken the one with the most value, which is to give an evidence under oath.
So how does this court decision affect Zahid Hamidi as an elected MP?
At the moment, Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi's position as an MP still stands, because the trial is not at its conclusion. It is merely at the halfway point. We have just heard the prosecution's case and we are yet to hear the defense case. So pretty much his position as an MP, as a member of parliament, is still remains and it is still safe. Meaning to say, he will not be disqualified as a member of parliament.
So what kind of timeline then should we be expecting for the courts to hear both prosecution and defense for all 47 charges?
I think right now we are at the end of the prosecution's case already. I mean, he's gone through the prosecution's case. What is left is the defense stage for this case. I would assume that it would take somewhere between 3 to 5 months before we get the conclusion of the trial in the High Court.
And cases involving politicians usually have a lot of public interest attached to them, along with this idea of a perceived bias in our courts and our legal systems. Where does this perception stem from?
In my own opinion, I believe that vast majority of people have absolute trust and belief in our justice system, in our courts, in our judges. I would like to take this opportunity to quote Professor E.V. Dicey's three postulates of rule of law, where he said that the common law judges are the best protectors of the people's rights. And many people believe that the judge or the court is the ultimate place to gain justice. And however, when a particular person is charged in court, especially someone with a lot of, followers, some of the followers would want to take a position that, you know, this is probably because of biasness and whatnot, which I believe it's baseless, as trial judges and lawyers, a lot of the officers of the court go through in detail to ensure that justice prevailed at the end.
Now, there have been reports where stay of proceedings are granted on court cases for various reasons, a case in point being Datuk Sri Najib Razak, Datin Sri Rosmah Manso. How are stay of proceedings granted, and have they been granted more frequently to cases involving VIPs?
Okay, stay of proceedings are granted when, for example, the trial is going on, and then either parties apply to the court to stay that particular proceeding while another proceeding takes place or while another application is heard and exhausted. So I don't believe that it is something that only VIPs get. As long as the parties can show the special circumstances in why a proceeding has to be stayed, the court will be willing to give the stay of proceeding. For example, I will just give an example. When you have a trial going on in the trial court, and you want to refer a constitutional question to the federal court, it means you do it by way of a reference to the High Court, and then the High Court will refer to the federal court. Then you can put a stay of proceedings to the trial in the trial judge while the constitutional question is referred and exhausted. Because if the constitutional question goes on at the same time as the trial, it would be academic when the constitutional question is heard, as the trial has already started. So in those kind of situations where there is a special circumstances, the court would be willing to give a stay of proceeding. But it is not something only special to VIPs or anything.
Before we let you go, what else can we look out for as this case develops?
So we are at the midpoint of this case. So it is now that Dr. Zahid Hamidi's turn to put forward his defense and whatever evidence and statements from witness to prove that he had no connection with this case, and the prosecution has failed to prove the charges, the 47 charges against him beyond reasonable doubt. So we are at the midpoint of the case, and it is only going to get more interesting. So I really hope BFM listeners would tune in to this case and follow the development of this case.
Pusha, thanks for speaking with us. That was Pushathaman Puvanendran, a lawyer, talking to us about Zahid Hamidi and the fact that the court has ruled he will need to enter his defence on the 47 charges against him. We've been asking you, are you going to be following along? You can let us know. And in the meantime, after the 7:30 news today on Everyone's a Critic, it's dance, is it not?
It's a contemporary dance, triple bill by three Malaysian choreographers.
So that will be coming your way after this. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.